Welcome to Dish the Dirt, a light-hearted and fun podcast about Australian flower growers, their stories, knowledge and insights into the industry. I'm your host Rebecca, and each week I speak to a different farmer and get them to dish the dirt. Dish the Dirt acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognise their continuing connection to land, water and community. We pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello and welcome to episode 3 of season 7. It's wonderful to have you along, and before we get into it, I would just like to say a huge thank you to everyone who has sent in photos for the calendar, and also everyone who I pestered last week with my camera up in Mombulk. It was wonderful to be able to see your farms and to have you be part of the calendar. Thank you so much, and thank you to Belinda from the Road Stall who organized that for me. We have an industry day coming up in New South Wales at Southern Highlands Flower Farm. That is happening on February the 25th. You may have heard me talk about it now, but tickets should be going on sale this week. We were hoping to have them out on the 11th, but we just need to finalise a few more things before we get them out the door. So keep an eye on the Instagram for that. Okay, let's get into this week's episode. This week I speak to the wonderful Carly from Caldera Flower Farm. Carly and Matt grow seasonal open field cut flowers on their 5-acre property located in Upper Crystal Creek on Bundjalung Country. They grow their flowers based on regenerative agriculture and no-till principles. They don't use nasty chemicals and enjoy building beautiful, healthy soil with their 3 youngest daughters alongside them. It was wonderful to speak to Carly, and we touch on their experience with importing seeds and how they got on with their phytosanitation certificate. So thank you for sharing your experience, Carly, and let's get into this wonderful episode. Hi, how are you going?
I'm really well, thank you.
That's great. I'm just going to let you know that I'm in my shop. So okay. If somebody walks in, I may just need to put the phone down for a second.
Where is your shop at?
So I'm in Hillsville in the Yarra Valley.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I've just got a little shop on the main street.
Yeah,
just
gorgeous. Below.
Yeah, it's good. It's lovely. But this time of the morning can either be really busy or really quiet, so okay. It's kind of a good time.
Okay. No worries at all. So, I wasn't sure. It was so funny. I said to Matt, we're like this small little flower farm. And he said, but we had an experience. He said, just share it so people can learn from it. And I was like, yeah, radio.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the whole premise of this podcast is never to be, you know, put people in boxes of like big or small or micro or anything like that, because everyone has knowledge to share and everyone has a story. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah. So if on that, would you like to begin with telling us where you're situated?
Yeah, sure. So we're in Upper Crystal Creek, so northern New South Wales. We're about 12 minutes northwest of Moolumbah.
Okay.
We kind of sit in a pocket between Springbok Mountains and Mount Warning. So, yeah, that's how we came up with our name, Caldera Flower Farm, because we live in the Caldera.
Lovely. And it sounds pretty beautiful there. What's the climate like?
Probably subtropical. Though this winter we had like the most frost we've had. We've been here 4 years and it was the most frost we had over winter. So pretty varied climate. We've found that we've been able to grow things a lot of people said, you won't be able to grow that here. And in saying that, we also had this incredible amount of rainfall. I mean, only about 2 weeks ago we were flooded in again. We had 265 millimetres of rain in a really short period of time overnight. We're lucky where we grow doesn't flood, but The bottom part of our paddock where our creek is, yeah, completely flooded. And the roads into town were flooded, and other sections, you know, two valleys over weren't flooded.
Oh, wow.
So it's, yeah, it's really
so funny, unique. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's so funny. I think it's because we are so close to that Springbok mountain range. Mm. And, you know, anybody that knows anything about clouds knows that for the clouds to pass over ranges, they have to drop water.
Yeah.
So we do get that heavy dump. Yeah, but, yeah, so it's a really beautiful part of the world and a really interesting climate. I mean, one part of our property feels like it almost has its own unique climate compared to another part. So, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. And how did you get onto your property and begin flower farming?
Well, we bought our property. It's 5 acres and initially just bought it because it's where we wanted to live. We wanted to have more space for the kids. And then I guess I've always grown flowers, just grown flowers, enjoyed cutting them for friends. We were looking at, I guess, our careers and what we were doing within those careers and the hours we were working. And I had this little idea in my head that maybe we could start growing, now that we had more space, we could start growing vegetables and flowers.
Mm.
So I did a whole lot of research and, of course, went down the path of going, well, flowers are beautiful. Let's get into growing flowers. So we, I guess, started researching soil was something that was really interesting to both Matt, who's my partner, and myself.
Mm.
We both have backgrounds in health. So
okay.
Just really interested in looking at that crossover between human health and plant health and soil health. So I started doing research and decided pretty early on that we wanted to go down the no-till path. So looked into how we could best grow raised beds. Some of those we built and some we have free-form raised beds. Okay. And have just expanded from there, really. We did start out really small, and then the last 12 months we've kind of really ramped it up, and yeah, we do everything by hand, so
yeah,
funny, people kind of either come out, we have some, you know, beautiful connections that you've found, and you say to people, well, we do it all by barrow and shovel loan, and people think we're crazy, but we both really like it because we call it farm fitness.
Yeah, great.
So it keeps us really fit and healthy, and yeah, I guess just that mindset of wanting to leave our property in a better place than how we found it. So
yeah,
feel really strongly that we've probably taken a little bit longer to roll things out because we're doing it by hand. And yeah, raised beds, for anyone out there who grows in raised beds, know that it's a timely process. It's much easier to get behind a machine and kind of till up the soil.
Yeah.
Though even that, we did have one attempt. We hired this hand tiller because Matt was like, let's trial it. So we actually initially built out these 6 beds and we trialed growing 6 different ways.
Wow.
And we just were in fits of laughter watching him try and use this machine. And at one point he stopped and he said, it's like the ground doesn't want us to do it. And I was like, oh, do you just want to give up? And so we laughed. But, yeah, it's been a really good process.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of the story of how we, yeah, came into doing what we do and how we're expanding.
Yeah, wonderful. And raised beds, for anyone that doesn't know, that's when you sort of build your bed on top of the ground.
That's exactly.
So you lay cardboard then...
We do cardboard, then we do green matter. So that's sometimes that's grass clippings or plants that we've cut down that we try and shred into smaller sizes. And then just recently Matt's been doing lots. I don't know, have you heard of a gentleman? He's based up in Yandina in Queensland called Graham Sayes.
No,
so
I haven't.
Really interesting to read about soil health and growing soil and growing better compost. And so we just started, what we do is, we do the cardboard, and then so we race around everywhere collecting cardboard. Then we do, chip. Then we do green matter. We have horses and a cow and chickens here. So then we do manure that we try and age for as long as we can. And if we can't age it for as long as we'd like, we do a BAM treatment on top of it. So then we moisten this manure. Then we do soil and compost, and then we mulch on top. So, there's a few layers to it, but works really well. And even during the heavy rains we had at the beginning of this year, we thought it was a good way to test how those beds would hold up, and they held up beautifully. So yeah, that was exciting as well. Yeah, they drained really well. We had some beds that we won't continue to grow in, and we've changed the way we do them. Just they're in a part of the property below a hill. So all the water poured down and we lost, you know, incredible amount of plants and dahlias and things. But it's all learning.
Shame.
No, it's exactly. Yeah, it's all learning. You're every day learning something new. Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. And what are you growing on your property?
Well, we grow seasonal flowers. Okay. We try and focus on, I guess, a smaller variety than a bigger variety, because we just want to get really good at growing certain things, and then we'll branch out into more. So in saying that, the cool season flowers we put in, we did have some new ones in. Was our first year of growing ranunculus. I hadn't even grown them on a smaller scale before, so they've been really beautiful. And now the crops we've got coming through, we've got our first buds on dahlias, cosmos, zinnias, and we've still got snaps and status, Queen Anne's lace. Yeah, just a real variety, because we now grow and cut and bunch ourselves. So that's the model we moved to in the last kind of 3 to 4 months, versus selling wholesale. We bunch and sell through Flannery's. We tried to vary what we're growing, but we're still keeping it pretty streamlined and just trying to get better at growing what we grow.
Yeah, lovely. And going back to, you've got first buds on dahlias, so you really are very different to in Victoria, where I don't think people have even planted out dahlias just yet.
So we stagger our planting. Last year I learnt definitely. Actually went to a fantastic workshop, and Peter Mason was running it, and I loved the probably one of the best things I learned through him was just that, you know, like all flowers, they kind of have a peak. And so last year we just staggered our growing season, starting seeds pretty early, because we can kind of generate that warm soil, and some tubers going in, and then I kept planting tubers all the way up till January this year, which enabled kind of the dahlias to have their peak bloom season for longer, and we had dahlias nearly all the way up to Mother's Day.
Oh, fabulous.
So, yeah, I mean, it's all learning, and we've got some amazing growers in this area who've been growing dahlias for a long time, so I always kind of listen and learn from them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the first buds, I know I said to Matt, next week we'll find out what colour this seedling is.
Ah, how exciting.
Yeah. And the rest are kind of all at different stages. Some are just coming through the ground. And then I just had picked up from the post office this morning when I was doing deliveries some new tubers. So, yeah, it's all just staggering them out. But it really excited to see the first ones bloom. They're such a beautiful flower.
Yeah, they are. They're incredible. And I just love all the different varieties. And I love it when people grow from seed, because then that's just creating something new again. It's really fun.
So exciting. Yes. Yeah. It's amazing. Really amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I sort of forget about them until it gets to dahlia season. And then I'm like, oh, this is why I really love them, because they're all different shapes and sizes and textures.
Yeah. And colours and varieties. Yeah, agreed. Yeah. They're really special.
So I want to ask you what your biggest challenge has been so far, and then also on the flip side of that, I always do the double question, sorry, but what your biggest achievement has been?
Biggest challenge I think for us was expanding during such a heavy wet season, and having to, I guess, maybe accept deeper losses than we had planned for. I think we're both really positive people, and it helps. It so helps to have a really supportive partner and, you know, someone who can lift you up on those days where you're kind of like, wow, that whole bed's wiped out. You're lifting up these tubers and they're just rotting in your hands, and you kind of know that financial investment as well as you were planning to have those flowers. So then having to kind of, I guess, relook at our business plan and just accept that, okay, there isn't going to be as many flowers. That probably for both of us was when we went, okay, we still have to maintain jobs off the farm as well.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, first world problems, I know. I understand that that kind of sounds like, well, that's not that big a drama, but it was the losses. It was pulling out just beds of flowers that we'd planned for, but kept it in perspective because we, you know, had flower friends that lost everything as well as their home. So, we kept it in perspective, but at the same time had to account for those losses and what that meant for our business.
Yeah, it hurts. It's a lot of financial investment that you are losing when that happens. And I guess maybe that's something for people who are starting within the industry to realise that, you know, you have to make plans for these sorts of events because we do work with Mother Nature. So, unfortunately.
I mean, you see growers who, you know, post pictures and, you know, their whole crop gets wiped out by cockatoos. They're just, there's just all these things that I think, you know, when you start out, it is really important to kind of keep in mind. You know, we talk about what percentage will we account for now as losses.
Yeah.
And it's not about a financial loss that we claim through taxes. It's just then we can plan how much we want to plant for. And we also, we grow in different parts of our property. It's not all in the same space.
Okay.
And that was a way of trying to account for, well, if a disease went through a crop, we're not losing everything.
Yeah.
So I guess they're really good lessons that come from, the not so good parts. And then the other question was, what's the best part, isn't it?
Yeah. What's been your biggest achievement, would you say?
I think just growing the business. I think saying to ourselves, let's give this a go and let's do everything we can to make it a success. I guess being a flower grower, you're always trying to work out the best avenue and how to sell your flowers. And for us, we were trialing lots of ideas and options. And then we just went and spoke to our local Flannery store, organic health food store, and said, hey, you know, would you be interested in growing flowers? This is a little bit about us. And then it took a huge process of negotiating with, you know, the executives of Flannery's around supplying flowers to them. And I'm really proud, I guess, of, you know, that we held firm on what mattered to us.
Yeah.
You know, and that's growing flowers, being around our children, being able to spend more time with the kids, as well as trying to create a business model that we could make this a success. So we both feel pretty proud of working on that. And we've been selling to the Gold Coast Flannery stores and our local one in Moolumbar now for a few months, and it's going really well and it's being received really well. So we're both really wonderful. Proud of that. Yeah, it's nice to kind of have a bit of a business plan and see it coming to fruition.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. And I guess that does mean just selling to the one place. You have your days that you pick and then the days that you bunch, and then it's out the door, and you sort of don't have people coming and going to your property all the time, which can be quite stressful sometimes. Yeah.
And we even still, like, if we have extra orders, there's a few wedding designers we've worked with, and I just prefer to go and drop the flowers off, I guess, you know, like, more than happy. You know, you get lots of inquiries from people saying, can I come and do a photo shoot out on your property? And we laugh, and I say to people, we're a cut flower business. It's not those dreamy florets, you know, flower beds. You know, on the days before we pick, they look full, and then you go and you cut and it doesn't look like those dreamy flower beds. They're all in bud and they're waiting for the next day of picking. But I love it. I love it.
So I wanted to get on to the topic of the importation of seeds and your experience within that, and how you think it's changed since the photosanitary certificate has come in.
Yeah, well, when we came to looking at importing seeds, we just did lots of research. We, I guess, went to the internet. We looked up Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, as well as the Bicoin, to look at what requirements were met. Because when we first looked to order, we were looking to order through Johnny Seeds in America, and it just clearly stated on their website that they couldn't deliver to Australia.
Okay.
So that led us down the path of doing lots of research. I'll be really honest, Matt is an amazing researcher, and he spent, I was working off in the evening. So he, once the kids were in bed, he was like, I don't think it's impossible. He said, I think we just have to help them find a solution. Mm. I guess that's kind of our motto. Like, it's, you know, there's always a solution. So Matt spent hours researching and worked out what species, like what genus we could and couldn't import. And then we put together an email and we wrote to Johnny Seeds and said, it's our understanding that these are the requirements we now need to meet. Are you happy to work with us? And they said yes. So
I guess
we were a little bit naive in the sense that we'd got wind that a lot of people were saying you just can't import seeds anymore. And then I'd see people and I'd say, well, somebody's importing seeds, or people were importing from the UK. So Johnny Seeds, we just sent them a list of what we could see that you couldn't import, and we made sure our order didn't have anything on it that you couldn't import. And then I sent them some details of what the phytosanitary certificate needed to have on it, and they already seemed to be aware of what it needed. And yeah, we actually had more hassles in trying to make payment for the seeds, to be honest, than once the seed order was in. The only big lesson we learnt was that our seeds did get held up. They were brought in through FedEx, and FedEx, our understanding was they were our import representative. Is it okay to talk about a company?
Yeah, that's fine. So
what we found is that FedEx, most of their help team is actually off-site through different countries, and so we would call, and I got so many mixed messages. I got emails saying our seeds have been held up by customs, and then I would get a, I'd wait on the telephone, I'd finally get to talk to someone from FedEx, and they would say, no, your seeds have been cleared. But cut a long story short, we actually, the gentleman from customs who looked at our seeds, he ended up contacting me himself, and he just said, look, there's one. So the phytosanitation certificate lists a whole lot of things. The certificate states like the name of the seed and the quantity that we were importing. It had like a botanical name and a genus name for every single seed. And then it states like a place of origin. So where the seeds came from, and then the additional information that we needed was that they were inspected in the States, checking each sample to check for evidence of any species of the Trogoderma, so the capra beetle. And then when they arrived, we were told that some of our seeds were being randomly inspected and tested themselves. So Australian customs then inspected them, and all that we got fed back from the gentleman, and this took weeks and weeks, and I felt really stressed because we shared our order with Field and Flowers at Swan Bay, who'd lost absolutely everything in the flood. So I felt this huge responsibility to get these seeds cleared, because I knew that the setback they had had was huge. So but this gentleman, he called and he said, look, I just need you to know there's one packet of seeds that don't meet Australian labelling requirements. He said it didn't have the proper genus name and it didn't match with something on their list. And he said, I just have to discard one packet of seeds and I need your signature.
Oh, and
he was so lovely. He said that phytosanitation certificate met everything that we needed. It wasn't that sanitation certificate that held you up. He said it was just that FedEx themselves normally clear the seeds themselves.
Yeah, great.
But because of the new changes and regulations, I guess FedEx felt nervous. And I guess the only other thing for anyone that was wanting to do it on a bigger scale was we were recommended that we use an import agency next time. For us, the feasibility of that, I mean, we're not like a big company like Ball Australia, so for the amount that we were importing, we didn't, we did look into it, but it was a lot of money to factor in on top of our seed price. So look, it all got sent, but it was nearly 6 weeks held up. They were held up, and each time that we didn't have them were weeks that we couldn't plant. But I guess the tip I would give is research. Don't just go and do a seed order without doing the research and making sure that you've taken every step you can to meet the new requirements.
Yeah, because what I've heard is that if you don't have all of your documents in place before your seed order gets sent or before it gets sent from whatever country you're importing, if it gets to Australia and there's one thing wrong on your documentation, they sometimes will send a whole shipment back.
Yeah.
And that can be very distressing, I think.
Yeah. So distressing. So that definitely, I mean, I guess even as, you know, our order in the big scheme of life, probably to a lot of people, they'd say, look, that's not a huge amount of money, but it was to both of us. It was a big investment. And if we lose this, then we're already behind because, it was money that we both were spending on orders to get, you know, flowers in the ground. So, yeah, I think it's just super important to do your research. Don't just do a late night 10 o'clock order and think that it's all going to be okay. And we were really thankful that Johnny Seeds did get back to us. There was an international representative who we worked with initially, and then he said, yep, happy for you to place the order. I guess it was just lots of research, lots of time. I'm really thankful for all the research Matt did. To get us across the line. And yeah, then the only stress was that, you know, like I said, that one packet of seeds, and it was Nigella lobinimus that was taken and destroyed. So it's just life, and it's a little loss that we had to take. But the reason we did look to do those seeds is we were looking, I guess, at varieties that you couldn't buy on that bulk level in Australia yet. Definitely flowers that we both really loved growing, but it's just not feasible when you're wanting to put 1,000 plants in the ground to buy seed packets with 25 seeds in them. So that is why we looked afield. You know, we try and do everything we can to kind of minimize that carbon footprint, but seeds in Australia are really tricky to find some, I guess, more unusual or distinctive varieties. And something when we were selling to the florists last year was that they really loved some of those different flowers that weren't just your regular kind of run-of-the-mill plug colors. So
think that's how the industry has gone in the years from florette sort of getting, you know, putting all these new varieties out, is that people do want something that's a bit different and something different to play with and to be creative with.
And it's so awesome to play with them.
So I think that's been probably people's biggest fear, is that we are limited to what we're going to be able to get in Australia. But through, like you say, through researching and reaching out to people, you never know what could happen, and you can still get those things through.
Absolutely.
I think it's the extra expense, perhaps, that scares people. Or when you buy through Johnny's, I know there's a minimum order.
Yeah, it's a $500. $500 US. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's where having a flower family community really, really can help, because Sue Ellen and I, you know, we split some of the seeds. It was like, you know, we agreed on colours we both liked, and it's lucky, you know, it's super easy to work with someone who has a similar, you know, idea around colours and palettes and things. But I guess just joining with other people and other flower growers and realising that, you know, for want of a better word, we're much, not powerful, but we're much stronger by working together. And once the seeds are in Australia, if you don't want to pick similar colours to someone who grows near you, there's so many flower growers all over Australia within the same state that you could just then send seeds onto.
Yeah.
So in terms of meeting that minimum order,
just disappeared for a moment.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
So I guess it's just getting a little bit smarter about it, joining together and working out, you know, how to get an order in, together versus one person trying to meet that requirement. In smaller places, they're not going to go through that process of the phytosanitation certificate. My memory is the phytosanitation certificate cost us about $147.
So I just wanted to quickly wrap up and ask you, if you have to leave your farm really quickly, what three farming related things would you take
Oh, if I had to leave my farm really quickly, I would leave all of the farming equipment behind and I'd take the animals and my family.
Okay.
Sorry. Nice. Yeah, there's, okay. There's nothing more precious to me than my animals and family.
Yeah, yeah, completely. There's not a favourite tuber that you would need to take or a favourite tool.
All of it's replaceable. You know, yeah. We have this really fantastic hand weeder from I think they're called Frying Tools, and I just lent it to my mum, and so it's already off the farm. But yeah, definitely kids, Matt, and the animals, I'd make sure they're safe. Yeah. They're all, the rest of it's replaceable. Yeah,
lovely. And do you have a favorite flower?
Oh, do you know what I absolutely love? I love cosmos. Mm. I love the way it dances in the wind. I love the way it dances in a bouquet. Yeah, definitely cosmos. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, I love it too. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And just on sort of the importing seeds, where do you think people should look if they are wanting to find out more information to import seeds?
I think do the research. The Bicoin site, it's not super easy to navigate around. We both made comments multiple times. Like it wasn't the best website, but just I think if you're going to make the investment and spend the money on importing seeds on a scale that we needed to, just do your research. The Department of Agriculture and Fisheries, I even found a telephone call to them when our seed order got held up. They were really helpful.
Yeah, great.
Just kept asking, was there anything I could do? You know, was there something I should have done better? And we just wanted to keep learning, but definitely do your research before and make sure that before the product leaves the company, I asked them to wait. I said, can you just hold off on sending our water? I just need to make sure that everything seems to meet. So at our end, we reviewed it before they sent it. And they were really helpful.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
And is there anything else that you would like to share about your story, your farm, that I haven't asked you about?
I think something that's come to mind for me lately is I saw a post and it was, is there too many flower farmers in your area? And
interesting.
Yeah, I found it really interesting because I just don't think like that. Like to me, I just think every single property could grow flowers and there still wouldn't be enough flowers in the world.
Yeah.
You know, like whether you're growing flowers for gifting or you're growing flowers to grow a business, they just bring so much joy to the world. And not only that, you know, they're these amazing pollinators. So we need flowers. We need flowers blooming everywhere.
Thank you once again to Carly, who actually recorded this episode from her car because their power was out that day. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this and also for that extra effort. If you would like to get in touch with Carly, you can do so through Instagram at Caldera Flower Farm. Thank you for listening in this week. If you would like to be part of the podcast, please email me at dishthedirtpodcast@gmail.com. Keep an eye out for those tickets that are happening hopefully this week for the New South Wales Industry Day. We've got some amazing guest speakers coming along. Really great food. It'll be a really, really fun day. So yeah, keep an eye out on Instagram for that. And also, if you would like to give me any feedback or if you would like to get me to ask a question that I'm not asking, or if there's a topic you would like me to get some information on, please again shoot me an email at dishthedirtpodcast@gmail.com. It's always wonderful to get your feedback, or you can leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. All right, until next week, I hope this rain that we're having in Victoria eases and everyone has a blooming, fabulous week.